Welcome to the Boneyard with Steve Robertson. As always, I am your good friend and host, Steve Robertson. Here on the Hump Day edition of Yard, hope things are well with you wherever you are today. Hope you're having a great week. Hope you're having a great week. Some of you, it's a vacation week. The weekend may be a vacation, maybe a trip down to the Redneck Riviera. I don't know what you got going on. I just hope you're enjoying it. Yeah. I hope you're not spending too much time, you know, with your head in the phone. I know we are. I know we all are. But nevertheless, I hope that life is treating you well. Got a lot to talk about today. We're going to kind of be a little bit all over the place too, to be honest with you. Because there's a few things I want to share some opinions about that are kind of in the news, shall we say, on the college sports side. And so we'll kind of get up to speed on that. Some things that kind of impact Mississippi State both directly and indirectly. I want to give I don't know how to really describe this, but to offer our support to Paul Jones, our colleague and former co-worker Paul Jones. Many of you have probably seen some social media postings about Paul. I'm not going to get into a lot of great detail because the truth of the matter is it's not anybody's business. But Paul has had a very, very difficult year. And it just kind of dates back to last year, you know, and he's my age. And to see how this has happened is startling. I mean, it really is. And it's really not any fault of his own. It's just incredible the things that have happened to Paul. But Paul and I have had our differences over the years. I mean, we were, you know, spirited competitors for much of our career. But at the end of the day, man, we're humans. And, I just wish that Paul would get better. He has some children that are younger than mine. His daughter Mary was good friends with my daughter Mia when they were coming up. But he has another child that's still at home. And, you know, those are the things you think about, right? I mean, it's like, you know, you just never think that somebody in their early 50s would have these kinds of issues. But I understand that he is in great hands and that he did have some responsiveness yesterday. That's a positive sign, right? But man, it has just been one thing after another. And they're not even like related. That's what's so weird. It's just so crazy. But listen, I know many of you guys know Paul or you've heard of Paul or you've read his work over the years. But if you are of the praying kind, let me ask you to send one up for Paul Jones and for his family. I mean, I can't even begin to imagine, you know, what his wife Allie and them have gone through. I mean, I just cannot even wrap my mind around it. And it makes you grateful for your health. I mean, it really does. And it makes you also consider your own mortality. You know, but we're going to be optimistic. And we're going to speak recovery into existence for Paul Jones. And I can tell you one of the things about Paul that most of you guys don't know. And even though he's a little bit dry, Paul has kind of got a cagey sense of humor, man. Like, we'll just be sitting in the media room one day, and all of a sudden he'll drop a zinger. And you never see it coming. He's got a good sense of humor. He does. And the one thing that I used to tell people all the time when Paul worked with us, I said, the one thing that I can count on every single day is I'm going to get at least two pieces of quality content from Paul Jones every day, right? And sometimes he'd need to go fishing or whatever, but you know, in our industry, that's one of the things that means a lot to you is consistency. And that was one of the things with Paul that was important to us. And we appreciate his contributions to our operations over the years, man. And we just absolutely wish the best for he and his family. And again, if I can just kind of implore you, you know, if you are a praying person, please pray for Paul. If you're a non-praying person, just send some good vibes his way because he could certainly use them. Speaking of good vibes, Bulldog Burger Company, they're here to give you good vibes. They are. It's free, right? The vibes are free. You got to pay for the food, the dining experience. You got to pay for that. But the vibes are great. I love going in there, especially in the summer months. And I love all the college kids. I do. I love them. I do. But I kind of like it when they're gone. Not for long. But I like the summer months because it gives us a chance to maybe kind of get out and enjoy some things too. But what's interesting too is sometimes some staff leaves, right? And so some of your favorite places maybe aren't as well-staffed as others, but Bulldog Burger Company, they always pull it off, man. They always do. They always have great staff. And again, great food, great pricing, great atmosphere, just a great ambiance and great vibes. It's true. Have the spring rolls as your appetizer to make you and everybody around you better looking. We all need more of that. We do. Make it part of your beauty care regimen. And then find your own favorites on that menu. I'm still hung up on the smash burgers. In fact, I think I'm going to have one today. Try to get one once a week. And it's like, Dan is like, hey, let's get Bulldog Burger. I guess just give me the smash. And then now it's like, what do you want? Just give me my regular. It's like become my regular order, you know. And I love it. I do. I enjoy it. I mean, I don't just eat for nourishment. I eat for enjoyment. And I enjoy the meals that I get from Bulldog Burger Company. I know you guys do too. Three great locations to serve you. University Drive in Stark Vegas, Gloucester Street there in Tupelo, Lake Harper Drive in the Ridge and Flowood area. And order that chocolate shake like right around the time that you're about to finish your entree. Go ahead and let your server know that, hey, we're going to be getting a couple chocolate shakes to go because we're going to ride that ride home with a smile. Bulldog Burger Company, the place where people go to meet, M-E-A-T. Okay, let's jump in a few things here, okay? Okay, the Brendan Sorsby saga seems to finally be behind us. And for those of you that need a quick primer, let me afford you one. You know, Texas Tech quarterback got caught gambling, which is a no-no, right? We've talked about it on the show before. And then there was all of this legal wrangling, like there always seems to be every time somebody gets an adverse ruling from the NCAA. We'll just take you to court. Well, this time it kind of blew up in their face. Tom Mars is a friend, and I heard from Tom recently, and I still follow him on X. And Tom's legal counsel online sometimes is so incredibly valuable, right? There's something out there that seems kind of complicated. And then lo and behold, Tom will send out a tweet that kind of breaks it down in language that I can kind of digest. And I love that. But there were some other people out there that also shared some opinions, some in response to Tom, that I thought were rather interesting. You know, the Texas Attorney General, the state of Texas, says, hey, we're prepared. If the Big 12 sanctions them, we're going to take them to court. And all of a sudden, the AGs like Utah and Kansas and Oklahoma and other places are like, hey, well, you guys want to go to war, we'll go too. And then ultimately, Texas Tech backs down. And now Brendan Sorsby is going to enter the supplemental draft. Supposed to have a pro day here pretty soon. But how would you like to find out that you've lost your starting quarterback? Now you've got him back. Oh, you've lost him again. Like, what a yo-yo of emotion, right? And, of course, they were expecting big things from him. And the thing that I go back to, and I had this discussion with somebody just yesterday, you know, because I know how the addict mind works, because I'm an addict. I'm not a practicing addict, but I still have some of those same attributes, right? When you're an addict and when you're in active addiction, everything makes sense to you. Everything. Like whatever you want to do, because it's basically the disease of self, right? Like we're all just chasing dopamine. You're always looking for the next rush. And so that's kind of what happened to Sorsby. It's like, you know, again, these prop bets, I mean, betting balls and strikes and stuff like that. I mean, it's just, it reminds me so much of the behaviors when I was in active addiction. You know, you just go back and like, what are we doing, right? And that's where step two comes in. For those of you who know 12 steps, you know, step two is like, you know, about being restored to sanity. And that's what will happen eventually with Brendan Sorsby if he is steadfast in his commitment to put this behind him. And he needs treatment. He does. He needs treatment. He is a gambling addict. And there's a lot of us that are addicts, and different things happen to people. You know, they're food addicts and sex addicts and drug addicts and gambling addicts. I mean, there's anything that kind of gives you euphoria sometimes can be a negative, right? I mean, people always talk about, you know, everything in moderation is fine. Well, you know, that's the problem. We can't moderate it, right? We just simply are incapable of doing that. And it's not an issue of morality. I know some people want to make it that to be the case. But I was, again, talking about this just yesterday. Somebody said, you know, like if you take a CAT scan of like your brain and my brain, they're going to look dramatically different. unless you're an addict. And I took one of these personality quizzes under the care of a psychologist years ago. And they told me the results were that I was one of the most addictive personalities they'd ever seen, right? We're breaking records, right? But that's who I am and what I'm about, right? And so I have to be careful with what I do. And that's why I have some sympathy for Brendan Sorsby, because in some respects, I've been there. But because I have been there, I can talk intelligently about that. But you know what? He has the opportunity to be where I am today, right? And that's to be free of all of that stuff. And I hope that's really the case. But man, what a wild ride. And it's like a soap opera, right? I mean, over the course of the last week, it's like even though we don't really care that much about Texas Tech athletics, right? But it's dominated the headlines. And then ultimately, now we have a solution. And Congress is still pushing the Protect Sports Act. There has been some progress with that. But again, I'm interested too, like the SEC and some others are against it. And there's a lot of people that are for it. I know the G5s are for it. And, you know, some of the things they're trying to do is they're trying to get some guardrails around this NIL stuff. Now, they're not going to – the rev share thing is part of the House settlement, so that they can't really have a say in a lot of that stuff. That law is already on the books. But, you know, they're just trying to get some framework around the NIL stuff and try to get some control on these agents. And I don't know that the casual fan fully appreciates how bad – things are with some of these agents. I mean, some of these people basically just hold schools hostage. They'll wait for the last possible moment and say, hey, if we don't get this, we're just going to back out. You know, we'll just go to junior college, or we'll sit out this year. There's a lot of that. They hold the schools hostage. So there's not a lot of decorum in some respects. And it gives the really good agents a bad name, because people think, oh, an agent, right? There's some people that are basically acting as agents that have no training whatsoever, no license to be an agent, but they're a part of this process. So we've got to have some framework around that stuff too. One of the things I think is interesting too is the healthcare provision. This is one of the things that we probably should have had a long time ago, right? When you begin to think about yourself, right? We talked about the other day, I moved that big armoire downstairs all by myself, all by my lonesome. I did it, even with my advanced age. But I'm feeling it now, a couple days later, you know. I mean, I'm not hurting, I'm just kind of sore, you know, because I don't get out and do a lot of physical activity like I used to. But that's kind of what happens. There are some things that happen with student athletes, and I'm not in any way discriminating against any other sport. But especially like in football, right? Because it is such a high impact collision sport, you have some injuries that kind of linger, and you have some that don't even really appear until after you're done playing. And so it makes sense that we would provide health care for those injuries even after they've left us. I think the window is like 4 or 5 years, I can't remember. But so like 4 to 5 years after you're done playing college athletics, if you turn pro, then they're on the hook for a lot of that stuff. But it gives them the opportunity to continue to get care for an injury suffered while they were a student athlete. To me, that makes perfect sense. And some would argue, Steve, they're getting enough. Well, I mean, we want everybody to be able to leave college and be whole, right? And some of those people are going to require some health care. So that makes a lot of sense to me. One of the cool things about this new Protect Act is now that the NFL Players Association, the National Basketball Players Association, and the NFL have all basically thrown their very public support behind this bill. And again, there's still some tweaks that have to be made. There's some things that, you know, got to be negotiated and fought out. But there is some semblance that there is something on the horizon. But again, it's interesting that the Big Ten and the SEC, not so fired up about it. And speaking of those, there's still a lot of chatter that the Big Ten and the SEC may eventually have like a super league. And that's something we've heard for a long time. And then the SEC and the Big Ten met here about 2 years ago, and they goes, well, we're trying to get a you know, a scheduling formula. We're trying to get some schedule stuff kind of figured out. Maybe we'll all play each other, right? Well, maybe we will, maybe we won't. But we're all going to be one big happy family one way or another. We're all going to be all wrapped up in this, and everybody's going to be excited about it, and we're going to find a way to make it work, whether it comes from a Super League, which I don't think is a great thing, and that's one of the things that the Protect College Sports Act is trying to prevent, is a big merger like that, because then there's all this pooling of media rights and things like that, and it gets very, very complicated. This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. And for some, summer is their favorite season of the year. Travel picks up, kids are out of school, adventure becomes a focus. For others, juggling it all can be tough. It could be overwhelming. Then they start counting down the minutes until the kids are back in school. And you feel like you're wasting all these days of beautiful sunshine. We plan to get out and have some fun as a family too, but we plan to thrive and not just survive. Therapy can help people better understand their needs and feel more confident setting boundaries and create a version of summer that actually feels good. BetterHelp has over 30,000 therapists. It is the world's largest online therapy platform, having served over 6 million people globally, and it works. With an average rating of 4.9 out of 5 for a live session based on over 1.7 million client reviews. BetterHelp therapists work according to a strict code of conduct, and they are fully licensed in the United States. The reality of it is you need to learn how to say no. You don't have to say yes to everything. Take advantage of BetterHelp and take charge of your summer. You don't have to say yes. Find support in therapy. Sign up and get 10% off BetterHelp.com. That's Better, H-E-L-P.com. What's interesting, too, the SEC, Greg Sankey has said, I don't think private equity is the way. Well, just a couple days ago, Utah closed a $100 million private equity deal. That's a big deal. Do you think we could use $100 million? You know, now, I don't know all the details and the parameters around this, but that's for one school. That's not for the state of Utah. That's one school. And so there are a lot of people that are pushing private equity. And I can tell you this, no matter what anybody else tries to suggest, there's a lot of SEC schools that are hanging by a thread when it comes to finances. It's true. And so they need to get an influx of cash. And so I think maybe that's something that may be on the horizon. And again, I know a lot of people are behind it, but sometimes, you know, you have some things that necessitate you to have to make some difficult decisions for survival. You know, we've dealt with some of that in Mississippi State. You know, and the one thing I'm real proud of is, you know, even back in during COVID, we didn't lay anybody off. A lot of other athletic departments did. We didn't do that. We had a substantial rainy day fund that has pretty much been exhausted now. But there is a lot of things out there, like with Arkansas canceling tennis, right? And then they bring it back, right? Had some donors kind of step up to fund things. But there are a lot of people out there that are having to make some very difficult decisions. And as the rev share cap increases, I think it goes from 20.6 or 20.5 to 21.6 next year. So that's another over $1 million that's got to be distributed to the student athletes. And so that's one of those things you begin to kind of work through, and you begin to understand that at some point the law of diminishing return is going to be a factor. So that's one of the things you got to consider. And everybody's like, well, Steve, they have all this money. No, they don't. They don't. And, you know, you got a budget, and all of a sudden you get some unexpected expenditure, and it's a problem, right? I mean, it's a problem. And so that's one of those things I think you got to consider, too, is that maybe private equity is the way. I don't know enough about it to give you an intelligent opinion, but I know this. I know there's a lot of people in college athletics that need money. And you begin to wonder, too, about like naming rights on stadiums. You know, I mean, does that become an issue as we get ready to move forward with that? Do we start selling more ads on the center field and outfield wall at Duty Noble? What do we do at Davis Wade Stadium, right? Because here's what the situations, and this is why some of our people within our own fan base have kind of been critical of us building an IPF, which I believe we need. But there are other people out there that don't think we need it. And one of the things that people say is anything you invest in, you need to get a return on that investment. Now, I would argue that building an IPF at a time when nobody else is really building might be crazy like a fox. And what I mean by that is that it kind of sends a signal that, hey, we're still building. We're still improving our situation. Of course, Florida is doing this incredible, billion-dollar stadium renovation at their place, and I don't know who all's paying for it. But I think maybe us kind of biting the bullet a little bit here and getting this thing done kind of gives us a chance to catch up a little bit. Because a lot of kids will tell you, like Dan Mullen would tell you when he was here, man, if we can just get kids to campus and let them see what we have, we got a good chance to get them. Just because a lot of kids think they're going to show up and we're going to be out in the middle of a pasture or something, right? They don't understand how nice the SEAL complex is. They don't understand, Palmero is a very nice IPF. Some people would say, yeah, but Steve, but you don't have a chandelier in there. We don't need one. If you've been to Alabama, it's just a big barn. LSU's isn't even 100 yards, right? And so this, I think, is a chance for us to get caught up. But there are some people that say, Steve, anything that we construct needs to make dollars. And again, my argument is by building this, I think it will help us in recruiting, I think. But the reality of it is not a lot of kids these days are making decisions based on facilities. They're making decisions on finances. And so when you go construct something, there needs to be a revenue stream attached to it. There needs to be a scenario where that building generates money. And if that means adding on a Duty Noble Field, that means adding some more luxury seats at Davis Wade Stadium, then eventually after you get through construction costs and you get settled, eventually that debt is paid and then you continue just to kind of make profits. And then you use that to offset some of your rev share stuff. You can use that to ensure that, NIL compensation is taken care of. There's a lot of venues that you can use that money in. And so I see both sides of the coin. But I also understand, too, that not everybody is kind of where we are in the facilities arms race. And so I get it, right? And so, again, with everybody else focusing so much maybe on the finances of player retention, we're building a building, for better or for worse. And again, I'm very much in support of this, especially considering that so much of this is being financed, through donations, right? So it's not like it's something that's necessarily going to impact our bottom line significantly. But it is something that I think is worth discussing. The plans are going to happen, right? And, we've got this big master plan, of course, and there was talk about us building a restaurant out there outside of Duty Noble Field and, who knows, like what that, and it's not just going to be on game day, right? Eventually, I don't know if it will ever happen, but that could be something that could help us, obviously, on game day, but it would also help us in town, right? We'd always use another eating option, but, the restaurant business is a dicey proposition too, right? But at least that is something that would generate some money for you. Not a whole lot. And there's a lot of times, too, that we're doing some things that are part of a bigger picture. And I think that's what needs to be understood. You start certain projects, and maybe initially, cosmetically, it doesn't look like it's going to be a big revenue driver, but it's part of a bigger issue. And that helps. And, we've got to do more events. You want my opinion on that? And I think it's stuff that you just pay for, right? Not just something you belong to. I think you've got to go pay for it. And so, we've done some concerts here. We did the baseball thing. We did the alumni game, the Savannah Bananas or whatever we called them. we had some fun with all that stuff and we made some money, right? We need to do more of that. We have the venues. And I've said for years that Humphrey Coliseum is underutilized when it comes to concert stuff. And I understand Tupelo's just up the road from us. And the Bancor South Center's, it's cool. I've been to several shows there. But we are not utilizing that space enough. And that's how I feel about it. I've said that for years. I told, maybe it was Scott Strickland, or maybe it was John, but I told him, I said, we should do, during the official visits, we should have a concert one every weekend. Do a country show one weekend, a rock show, and then and do like a rap or R&B show, right? And then the kids are going to want to come visit, and they're going to have a great time, right? Makes a lot of sense to me. And the city's got to be a willing partner to it. But I think there are some things that we could utilize to kind of make that stuff work. I think events are better than donations. We love donations because we don't have to give anything for them, right, other than a tax break. But there are a lot of people that aren't going to write you a check just for the sake of writing you a check. But if you give people some incentive to spend some money, and then you get a take of the proceeds and the merch sales, makes a lot of sense, right? And I think you guys probably see it the same way I do. You know, I think when you are when you're swinging for the fences, you need to have a big bat. And I know, like, we first started the all the NIL stuff, we're like, man, if we could get like so many people to just give $1,000, well, for some people, that's almost a month's pay, right? But you know what? They could save up and buy a concert ticket. They could save up and buy some concession stand money, right? Raise that for you and probably come buy a shirt. You know, they could probably do that. They probably couldn't give you $1,000 a year. But for a special occasion, they can come probably drop like $100, $200 for you. And that's a bigger crowd. And so I think, again, there's more than one way to skin a cat. And I think sometimes we're leaving some low-hanging fruit out there. And I know people are working on it. Don't get me wrong. I don't think people are asleep at the wheel here. But, you know, I know we're doing this thing now with Live Nation or whoever it is, if they still exist after this recent lawsuit. But, you know, we're going to have the hump available. And it's one of those things, too. It just kind of sat dormant for years when it came to a musical venue. And we've had some historic acts play at Humphrey Coliseum. And I remember coming to see Whitesnake up here. The Whitesnake and White Lion, maybe? Maybe. I don't know. You guys would know. I went to a lot of shows. And I don't get to go as often. But the one thing that I know, and even though I'm not a country music guy, people in Northeast and Central Mississippi, they will come to a country show. So, you know, you get, you know, whoever, they'll come. They will. They'll come from Itala County, and they'll pack up in the pickup trucks and they'll come up here and they'll get a cup of cold beers and, you know, they'll get a hotel room, you know, and when the city does good, the university does good, you know. And so there's a lot of things happening, but money is everything, and everybody wants more money. Everybody wants more money. And the reality of that is, when we talk about college athletics, like we talk about in college baseball, you can never have enough runs. You can never have enough money when you're in college athletics, because it's a never-ending cycle of facilities, student athletes, all these demands, buying out coaching salaries. But I can promise you this, despite what you may read in the paper, there's a lot of universities around this country that are living a paycheck to paycheck when it comes to athletics. It's the reality for some. And it's not going to get any better. And that's one of the reasons that so many of these other schools are really pushing this Protect College Sports Act, because of the fact that it gives them a little more of an operating platform and gives them a chance to really survive. And I thought it was really smart to bring the G5 coaches to that last little meeting on Capitol Hill. Just because it's one thing when you roll in Nick Saban, like, and that's the shock effect, right? You bring in Nick Saban, you bring in all these guys that everybody knows, and there's a celebrity associated with it. And I thought bringing the other people in, even though they are still minor celebrities and certainly local celebrities in their own communities, that's the downside of what's happening, is those schools are kind of getting pillaged, right? There's a lot of those schools that, yeah, you sign a kid that nobody really wants and you invest 2 or 3 years in him and you finally make him a good player and you don't get to reap the benefits from him because he's in the portal and heading off to the SEC. Yeah, and everybody's like, well, you know, I mean, Steve, it's a free market economy. And I agree with all that stuff too. But, you know, if you are the head football coach at Southern Miss and you took a chance on a kid and then invested 3 years of your time and then never got the full benefit of his talent, you would feel somewhat shortchanged. And again, they're trying to change some of the transfer portal stuff. You can read on it, and it won't pass in its current form, but we're getting there. And again, I don't really understand the big complaints from the SEC and the Big Ten. I think a lot of it's because those two leagues want to merge. I think that may be the hang up there. I haven't heard any other good reasoning behind it. I've heard a lot of rhetoric, but it's so funny. Everybody agrees that we need change, and then we bring change. We're like, well, no, not that change. Not that change. That change inconveniences me. So no. I want everybody else to change. I want everybody else to be negatively impacted. I don't want to have to give up anything. And that, you know, has been the case in all of human history. But hopefully they'll get this thing done. All right, time for today's top 10 list. As always, brought to you by closewithblair.com. That's C-L-O-S-E with Blair, B-L-A-I-R.com. Get his 25 years of knowledge and expertise working for you. Yeah. So the mortgage industry can be a very complicated one, right? And sometimes they ask for all kind of crazy stuff, like a note from your mom, a lock of your kid's first haircut, a pint of blood. I mean, you just don't never know what they're going to ask for. And sometimes it doesn't make a lot of sense to you, but it makes good sense to Blair, because he's going to construct your loans that kind of preempts a lot of those questions, right? We're being a little bit hyperbolic here, but underwriting sometimes can be a little bit difficult, right? So you need somebody that knows the ins and outs of that process and construct a loan that gives you the best chance for approval. Well, that's where Blair comes in. And maybe you've been turned down before. Maybe it's time to try again. If you're not ready, Blair can put you on a path to get ready to make a purchase of a beautiful home where you can put some roots in the ground. Yeah. 601-500-2344. Blair's a bulldog through and through, and we'll get you to the closing table when so many others can't. That's Close with Blair. All right. I told you it's Dad Week, and we did rock songs on Monday. Got a lot of response from you guys, too, about some of the things we talked about with our dads. A lot of people said, Steve, my dad was a lot like yours, or my dad is a lot like yours. And, very grateful, right? Very grateful to have been born the son of Freddie Robertson and to be taught about work and responsibility and family. And one thing I'll tell you, a hot take from Freddie Robertson, he did not like the Thanksgiving Egg Bowl. Did not like it at all. Felt the college football should be played on Saturdays. He said Thursday is Thanksgiving. Thanksgiving is for family. And we shouldn't be having to pick and choose between ball games and dinner or lunch or whatever. That was uncompromising with him. And I said, what about on Friday? Nope, Friday's for high school football. So Daddy was very much a Saturday Egg Bowl guy, very much so. We didn't agree on that. I like it on Thanksgiving. Some of you don't. That's okay. We can all have our own opinions. None of us have the corner of the market on all the great ideas, especially when it comes to sports. But, that was a big one for Daddy. And so we're going to go country today. Country. We haven't done a country list in a while. And so, you know, I'm not a country music aficionado. Not my thing. But nevertheless, we're going to give it a shot. Got some classic country. Got some modern country. Got some country I didn't know much about, to be honest with you. And that starts at number 10. It's Jordan Davis's Next Thing You Know. It's a very clever song. Came out just a couple years ago. I had never heard it before until I began doing our research for this show. very, very catchy. And, you know, it's like you meet a girl, the next thing you know, right, you're doing this. And the next thing you know, there's a pregnancy test on the bar, and then she's crying. And next thing you know, you're hospital room, and they're asking you, how you doing, Dad? Nobody's ever called you that. Next thing you know, right? I mean, it's a very clever song, and it's a very poignant song, too. And so I think it's one that you'll enjoy if you're unfamiliar with, if you like the country music genre. You guys are maybe sick of that song by now, but I think it kind of fits our motif this week. All right, number nine, Keith Urban's Song for Dad. It's a little different, okay? It's a little different. I like Keith Urban a lot. And I know he's from Australia, and I know he's had some challenges, but he also has had a lot of success in life, too. But Keith Urban's great. He really is. And, you know, we all want to kiss a girl, right? Well, most of us do. But, yeah, Song for Dad, and, you know, I think everybody enjoys that kind of stuff. You got a good relationship with your dad, it kind of makes you misty-eyed. Number eight, kind of making you misty-eyed, going back several years, Dolly Parton's Daddy Come Get Me. And she had been married to a guy, and he put her in a mental hospital, right? I never thought he'd do this to me, and, you know, he left her, you know, and she called her dad to come get her. And, it sounds kind of silly now. It used to happen. It did. It used to happen. And maybe sometimes it was for a good reason. But not in the case of Dolly Parton, the queen. Number seven, and I know some of you country music snobs, and there are some of you, will say, Steve, this song isn't country. I think it's close enough. It's more folk, Americana type. I know she had some top 40 hits, but it's Jewel, My Father's Daughter. And the video kind of starts with her yodeling with her dad playing the guitar. And she kind of gets giggly. And her dad says, you know, if she'd stop giggling, she'd really do well, wouldn't she? You know, but she said, we didn't have heirlooms. We had songs. That was like the kind of the preface of the video itself. And I kind of dig that, too. You know, when you think about your own family, right, especially those of us that grew up broke as the Ten Commandments, right? I mean, I remember being a kid, man, living with my grandparents, man, and all we had was each other, you know. That was it. And I remember my grandmother, man, I used to think, why don't we have this? Why don't we have that? And she goes, you know, we got all we need. We got each other. And that, there's some truth in that, that there is some gospel, Bible truth in that. As long as we have each other, we have everything, right? May not have all the material possessions, but you got everything you need. And it seems like when you got your grandma, you got even more than you need, because like she can just work miracles, right? That's just how it feels. Okay, number six. I did not know a lot about this particular band. I had heard this song before, and I can't place where I heard it, but it's basically about a guy giving his daughter away in Holy Matrimony. I Loved Her First from Heartland. That's your number six track today. And I don't know what the next few years hold, you know, but I'm sure at some point I'm going to have to walk one of my girls down the aisle and give her away to some dude. And it's not going to be easy for me. It's not. And you say, well, you know, Steve, they're already dating. And I get it, but it's a little different when you're getting married and beginning a life together. You know, it is. And I thought about this earlier today. Like, I remember when, you know, being dad, right? There's just, again, as I mentioned the other day, there are so many things in a daddy job description they don't tell you about. And, you know, Dana and I lost two kids, stillbirth. And when Ani and Betsy were pregnant for the first time, and Vivi was really small, and we got really concerned. And the doctors were very concerned. And so rather than just be a passenger in the crisis, I decided I needed to be the pilot. I needed to be daddy. And so once I dried my eyes, I told everybody on the conference call, I said, listen, Vivi is a Robertson, and she is made from the same great stuff that all of you are made of. And the Robertsons are fighters, and the Robertsons are people that figure things out. And we have to trust that because she is built from that same stuff, that she will overcome this. Well, she did. She did. And she's perfect. She's a little on the short side, but she is perfect. She is so smart. She is so beautiful. And I'll get to spend some time with her next month. We all take a vacation together. But those are the kinds of moments when you got to be dad, right? You can't let your own grief and your own worry steer you away from your role as the leader of your family. You can't. You can't do it. You can't be a spectator in your own life. You got to be a leader. And sometimes, and I'm a firm believer in this, you know, when you reach the end of your own understanding, that's where you find God, right? And I have been there many times in my life. And in those moments, because you start thinking, oh my gosh, I don't want my children to experience this. I don't want them to have those memories or those moments. You don't want it. And I remember just praying about it and telling God, I will take it all because I know that I can carry it. And even though I know they're capable of carrying it, I don't want them to carry it, right? But of course, the path is the path. But as we're navigating down the path, sometimes daddy's got to get out in front. Number five. And I think about this song too sometimes. I remember when the song came out, Trace Adkins, You're Gonna Miss This, right? And there's so much of that. I had just yesterday, I was talking with my lawyer, and he was telling me all these things he's got going on. And I was like, man, you're working late tonight. And he goes, oh yeah, I've had to kind of get caught up on some stuff, been traveling a lot, doing this and doing that. We got this going on, this going on. I said, dude, I tell you what, I'll trade weekends with you, you know? And I think it kind of like struck him a little bit. You know, I miss all the travel ball stuff. You know, I miss going out there watching my kids swing a bat. I miss that stuff. Now, I'm not unhappy in my life, but I can tell you there are going to be phases through your life that sometimes when you're in the midst of them, it feels like an inconvenience. But when you get to the other side of it, you would trade in a second for one more weekend of dance recitals, one more weekend of travel team baseball, you know, one more weekend of travel team soccer, one more summer dropping them off at band camp. You miss those things as you get older. You do. That's why we write songs about that stuff, because you know, you think it'd be easy for us to, you know, we never experienced it. You think, oh, it's true. Number four, Randy Travis. I got to admit, I wasn't a huge Randy Travis fan. I wasn't. I did at one time down at Fort Walton Beach, and they had the little thing where you could sing, and they would record you on a cassette. They told you that they wouldn't play you outside, but they did. It was marketing. And me and my sister and my brother and my sister's friend, Missy, who kind of had a thing for her, we sang Randy Travis's Forever and Ever, Amen. And it was required. I had the cassette at this house. Maybe one day I'll find a way to play it for you guys because it is absolutely horrendous. But nevertheless, Randy Travis, he walked on water. Of course, that's about his dad. You know, it's like a guy's got a lot of million problems, but to me, he walked on water. Number three, sticking with some classic country. It's a coal miner's daughter herself, Loretta Lynn. They don't make them like my daddy anymore. Right, and that's one of the things that's so funny too. Like a friend of mine talks about all the travel that I do, and you know how I can rebound so quickly, and I don't rebound as quickly as I used to. I'm getting older, need a little more sleep. Didn't get a lot last night, but he said, "Dude, I think you're the last hard man," and that's not true by any stretch of the imagination. But I do think things have changed a lot. Like when I think about my dad, like my dad was like, you know, the fashion consultant, you know, he was the guy that had the answers to every question you ever had. It didn't matter if it was about politics or it was about fishing, you know, daddy was like a walking encyclopedia, right? And I don't know if that's really the case. A lot of times we devote our memory banks to things that are more trivial than true, right? And that's an important aspect of life, I guess, too. We get so caught up in so many other things. We don't always focus on the things that matters. But, you know, my dad did. But number two, Conway Twitty. That's my job, right? And that's one of the things, too. You know, it's one of the most important things you'll ever do in life is to accept the mantle of fatherhood, right? To be the man in your child's life when they're just figuring the world out, you know. And again, one of the greatest things that I've ever heard is, like, the greatest gift you can give your children is to love their mother, right? And that's one of the things I've always kind of, like, I don't yell when I argue, right? I mean, sometimes I do. Like, if somebody cuts me off in traffic or something, I may, just to get their attention. I'm one of those kinds of people that when the pressure gets hot, I can speak at a very low register. And I don't let people get me elevated. If I get elevated, it's my choice. I don't let people get a rise out of me. And I think sometimes that's the best revenge. And my children have never heard me scream at their mother, ever. They've never heard me call her the B word, because I've never called her that. And even on the worst days, she is my wife and she is the mother of my children. And that's a responsibility that I take very seriously. Number one, though, it's George Strait's "It's Love Without End." Amen. What a great song. What a great song. And I remember, like, when we had Ani, right? Because, again, we had lost our first child, and we had Ani. And then we lost our third child. And Audrey was about to be born. And I remember thinking, oh, my gosh, this poor child. I'm not going to have enough love to go around, right? It's like, oh my gosh, how could I ever love a child as much as I love Ani? And then Audrey was born. And you find out that the gulf of your heart is never ending. Right? It never ends. And just like this couple days ago, I called and talked to Mia while she's out working in Houston, Houston, Texas. And just to hear, like, the excitement in her voice about all the things, you know, the things that she's working on and the places she's been and that kind of stuff, it makes me love her that much more, right? And, like, just when you don't think it's possible, right, the next thing you know, like, your child will do something, you think, I'm just so proud of them, right? I'm just so proud to be their dad, right? Those are the things that I think about when I think about my legacy. I think I've shared with you guys before, I was asked this, I think it was MPB. They said, what do you think your legacy is? I said, it's easy. It's my children. Because they will do greater things than I ever did. And that's the truth. You know, that's not me, like, resting the responsibility on their shoulders. It's, I'm just convinced, after being around them their whole lives, that they're going to do greater things than me. They got the best of me and Dana both. They really did. And you have a lot of people that talk about what a great job we did raising kids, but I can tell you, man, it's all a gift from God. It's all a gift from God. And I think we have done our best to maybe fertilize that and to, you know, focus those children on what matters most, but, man, to love them where they are. And there's been so many times, yeah, it's a funny story. Like, everybody thinks I'm so ultra competitive, and I am. I am absolutely, they should probably, like, do a study on me. I am so competitive. And even if you're not competing with me, I'm competing with you. I mean, that's just, you know, it's how I motivate myself. But when Ani first started playing T-ball, and the neighbor's kid, Bobby, wanted to spend the night, and he spent the night with us a bunch. And anyway, we had a T-ball game. And Ani played for the Rockets. They wore red T-shirts with, like, a black rocket on it. It was so cool, right? And he had his sweatbands on and everything and his eye black. I mean, you got to overdo it, man. If it's worth doing, it's worth overdoing. And anyway, we didn't let Bobby go to the game or something. Anyway, but Ani had decided that he was going to like kind of pout. And so he was playing shortstop in his T-ball game, and there were a couple balls that went his way, and he didn't field them. And so as soon as the inning was over, before I could say anything, his mother is basically through the gate and telling him, if you don't play ball, I'm not going to let Bobby spend the night, period. And she got his attention. And then I think he fielded maybe 18 balls the rest of the game. Like he was, you know, he's like Cal Ripken out there. He's like Derek Jeter, you know. So it's not just me, right? But it's just so interesting, too. You think about when in the beginning you wonder what your kids are going to turn out to be. And so many people say, well, you know, I want them to be happy. Well, happiness is a temporary emotion. And some people are afraid to tell you that because that's what their quest is. I want to be happy, right? Happiness comes and goes. You know, you have to be content with the life you lead. You know what? You got to be affirmed in the choices you make. Right. There's a lot of people that get halfway through this thing and they want to redo, you know, and it doesn't work out that way. And so then what happens is we got to change everything else, right? Well, let me get divorced. Let's go buy another house. Let's move. Let's change up. And sometimes all that stuff's necessary. I get that. But there are a lot of people that are chasing an emotion that is temporary rather than chasing what really matters in life, right? Wherefore I am, I shall be content. And again, I don't know where that came from. But it's something that's stuck in my mind. It's worked for me my entire life. And you know, it's just like every time I turn around, like we had a situation just this week, right? Not to give you too much detail, but you know, I closed the deal, so we got a little more money than, you know. And so, and again, it's always great, right? More money is great, right? And as soon as we got that extra money, like something popped up. Like, oh my gosh, we got to take care of this. And for about 45 seconds or so, like I was really like angry and freaking out, right? I didn't like say anything or break anything, but I was like, oh my gosh. And I reminded myself, I said, you know what? If I have to use this money for that, then that's why God gave it to me, right? That's because sometimes it feels like you never get ahead, right? That's what I resolved myself. I said, you know what? And sure enough, I called the people, and it turns out that, no, it was okay. I didn't have to do all that stuff. So then we get to put that money in the bank, right? And so it's always good when those things happen. But I think even when they don't happen, like there have been so many times that when we were paycheck to paycheck years ago, and, you know, something bad happened, we were sunk, right? You know, you get a flat tire or, you know, you got to get your oil changed. It means you got to eat sandwiches for a couple days. You know, it was tough. I'm glad I had those days. And I remember one time something happened with Dana's van back when she drove a van and had to with all these kids. But something happened. And we had to go put it in the shop or whatever. And it was somewhat expensive, but we got it fixed. And he said, I just hate that we have to spend this money. I said, well, at least we have it. There was a time in our life that we didn't have it. And we'd have to depend on somebody else, or we'd have to cut this, or maybe we didn't pay the cable bill for a month. I mean, there were times in my life that's how tightly wound everything was. And it's not like that anymore. And of course, we're running two businesses now, and there's sometimes too, we got to be smart and say, okay, this month we got to really cut back here. But I think about those things with the spirit of gratitude. And what I mean by that is I remember struggling and I'm grateful for the struggle. And it's when you're in it, it's tough to be grateful. It is. Because you see everybody else around you and you feel like they're thriving, right? They're not, but you feel like that. There are some that are, but most people aren't. But that's what you go through, right? And but I'm so grateful I had those moments. Right, because it made me appreciate things so much more today. Like if I had gotten so much too much too fast, I wouldn't have been able to handle it. But Dana and I built this up from nothing, absolutely nothing. All like back to my grandmother, all we had was each other and a dream, and we weren't even sure what shape the dream would take. We just wanted to be together, and we would figure it out. We'd raise kids, and we've raised our kids, and you know, I think we've done some good in the world. And that means more to me than this big house out in the country, right? I was going to say it means more to me than that cool car, but Ruby's pretty cool. But you understand my point, right? There's so much that we get caught up with. We think all these things are going to fix us, and they're not. They're not. And I'm here to tell you, there was a time in my life I just thought, man, if I ever had a BMW, I would be happy. Then all I had was more expensive repair bills, right? So there, wherefore I am, I shall be content. And if you are not content with today's top 10 list, reach out, let me know. Give me a suggestion. We'll do something for you next week. But we're going to do our R&B Father's Day special on Friday. And if you got suggestions, hit up Roy Samanti on X at Dogmatic67, DAWGMATIC67. Let me try that one more time. DAWGMATIC67 on X. And you can find our great list on Spotify under that same handle. All right, next segment of the show brought to you by Campus Bookmart, a Starkvillian institution. We love Campus Bookmart. We do. We do. And the reason we do is because they got the stuff we want, right? When it's gift buying time in your life, don't overthink it. Don't try to get cute with it. You know, don't try to reinvent the mousetrap. We're very simple creatures. Just get us more Mississippi State stuff. We'll be happy with that. And you'll be our favorite gift giver. It's true. Because somebody else inevitably is going to get something silly and they're going to go to the bottom of the list. And you know what else? When it's time for us to buy you something, chances are we're going to buy you Mississippi State stuff too. Because we know it makes you happy. The happiest place on earth, when we're not playing, is Campus Bookmart. Because you can go in there and get some new apparel, whether it's the fashionable polo. And I would encourage you to wear white early in the year if you don't. I love maroon, but I'm not sitting out there with you guys. It's warmer. We are too. But I would encourage you to wear white. And be careful with the nachos. It's tough, man. It's tough. But, yeah, so if you need the polo or a T-shirt, or maybe it's time you trade it in. Maybe you need a dress hat. You know what I'm saying? Like you got your everyday hat. Maybe you need to get like your game day hat that you only wear on game day or wear to church Sunday nights. Maybe. You can find all that stuff at Campus Bookmart. Miss Kathy Brown does an amazing job outfitting that store with the finest in Mississippi State fashions. And of course, everything you need to detail out your fan cave, your car, your office, your home, your pet, whatever. You can find it all at Campus Bookmart. Now stop by and see their smiling faces the next time you come to Starkville. If you can't make it to town, or perhaps game day is a difficult shopping day for you, I know for some of you it's a big production, visit them on the World Wide Web at campusbookmart.net. And by being a loyal Boneyard listener, we give you a phrase that pays. That is BSR. That stands for Beautiful Steve Robertson. That gets you free shipping on all orders over $75. Any order less than 75 bones, absolutely incomplete. All right. College World Series winding down. We're keeping up with it. I it's tough for me to get the afternoon games because I got so much to do here. Admission control. It's a lot going on. But Troy, the end of the road for Detroit Trojans, and Skylar Meade, such a great guy. I think, I don't know if anybody, from a coaching standpoint, has maybe had a better week in Omaha than Skylar Meade. Like, you see a lot of his clips going viral and stuff because he says so many of the right things. And, you know, West Virginia's having a good run, obviously. And, again, I got to tip my cap to them. They're still alive. And they went 12-0 over Troy. Out-hit them 14-4. Even made an error. Didn't matter. And then last night, very interesting game. And, again, Georgia struggles to score offensively, but they get five hits in the ball game and win 2-0. They don't hit a home run, and again, they're very reliant on the home run. But man, Dylan Vigue and those guys did a great job. Bird comes in. You know, they got to figure it out today, right? But you know, there's no tomorrow if you don't win today. But Texas season is over. And honestly, after we played them, I felt like, you know, if these guys stay healthy, they got a chance to win the whole thing. Well, they did have a chance to win the whole thing, but they didn't do it. And you don't score, you know. But listen, with Dylan Volantis, you know, Riojas, I mean, they had some guys that were a little bit up and down the stretch, but Volantis was great. And it was interesting last night. I think the first time through the order, Georgia struck out 8 of 9 times. And make of that what you will. Make of that what you will. And then we get over to today's games. Because, you know, now we're down to the final four. So North Carolina and Virginia will play the early game. North Carolina only has to win once, and they advance to the College World Series final. West Virginia has to win and then win an if necessary game to make it. And it was a great game between West Virginia and North Carolina the other day. Some big hits late for the Diamond Heels, as they say, proved to be the difference. Oklahoma and Georgia, that'll be a rematch. And again, it just blows my mind. And again, it just shows, again, further evidence that the SEC is a great conference for college baseball. But also, too, it's about getting hot at the right time of the year. Oklahoma finished 11th in the SEC. The only team behind them that made the tournament was Kentucky. So Oklahoma, 14-16. They didn't have a winning record in the league. They're a win away from playing for the national championship. And I go back to something John Cohen told me when he was the coach here, back when we had an 8-team SEC tournament. He goes, Steve, if you can get to Hoover, you can get to Omaha. And if you get to Omaha, you can win a national championship. I mean, and that's the way you have to kind of look at this stuff. And if you look at Oklahoma, they didn't host. They've had to do all of this, you know, on the road, but they've done it. And they've beaten some of these mid-major teams, you know, some of these grow the game nerds always advocate for. But what a great pitching performance the other day from Oklahoma. And I'm just curious to see how Georgia pieces this thing together. Right? I mean, I'm sure everybody out there is like, Coach, I can give you an inning. I can give you two. And I saw some people last night talking about Georgia's bullpen is set up really well. They got the big boost from Volchko, right? Because he pitches the complete game. Oki's probably done, right? They say he's got a rubber arm, but what did he throw, 120-something pitches? I mean, you know, he really threw the other night. But and then Dylan Bigue, you know, got hit in the leg against us in the Super Regional and had an outstanding game last night. And it's, I remember watching that kid leave the Georgia complex and he limping to his vehicle, man. It was sad. I mean, I said, you know, it's probably just a bruise. He'll be okay. You know, they got great people to handle him. And, you know, listen, I hear he's a great kid. And so you like that aspect of it, to see a guy that got knocked out of his Super Regional game and gets a chance to go to Omaha and then puts on a great performance. And he's been up and down and down the stretch. He really has been. And so, you know, how does Georgia pitch this thing? You know, I think Oklahoma's probably in much better shape, obviously. They've had to play one less game. But, you know, we knew kind of going against Georgia that they didn't have a ton of starting pitching. And so they had to use Cade and Aoki twice against us when they came here to Starkville. And then, we saw Volchko three times. Got better against him every time. But what will the Oklahoma offense look like? And I think Georgia's pitching, you know, this may be the end of the road for Georgia tonight. Maybe, but hey, you know, they keep finding ways to win. And they're, again, the highest seed left. And it's so interesting, too. We talk about, you know, seeding the tournament and all that kind of stuff. Guys, we didn't need to reseed anything. Everything went great. Listen, I'm a fan of the bracket being the bracket. I mean, we don't reseed the NCAA tournament. We don't reseed the FBS playoff, right? I mean, it's like, so the bracket's a bracket. Why would we do that, right? So when you look at it now, there are four teams left. Oklahoma, who was not a top 16 national seed. Georgia was number 3. Carolina was 4. And then West Virginia, they're at 9. And again, to me, they're the surprise of this tournament. But it's just so crazy to think about. You have 4 teams left, and then 3 of the 4 are from the top 9 seeds. And I guess that's not right, because they got a 9 by West Virginia's name, but Southern Miss was the 9 seed, if you recall. Yeah. But we know Georgia was 3 and Carolina was 4. And so, again, so two of your top 8 national seeds may play head-to-head for a national championship. And so that's an important aspect of this thing, too. You know, I think it was a successful bracket. And there's always going to be arguments, you know, well, Mercer got left out. Mercer was not making it to Omaha. Everybody was just hoping they'd win a game and maybe cause some chaos or win in a regional. They just weren't going to make it. But it's just so interesting how you work through all this stuff. Now, so in the event that both games get, you know, closed out, you know, we'll get ready to play a play an if necessary game if we have to. But then we get into the College World Series final. And that's one of those things that, you know, if you're a fan of the game, you're going to watch. And I am. I'm going to watch it. And my wife and I watched the end of the Georgia-Texas game last night. And, you know, it's just how things play out. But, you know, we love college baseball in this house. But, again, I think when you look back now, you can say with some certainty that this tournament was seeded well. And obviously, there's some people that would suggest we should have been seated higher or lower because they wanted an easier path. They didn't want to face Georgia. I don't understand. I understand the path of least resistance. I don't advocating that we should have been the, you know, 15 or 16 seed. People are like, oh, we should have been that. And it had been okay. But again, you look at what Oklahoma did. You know, it's, you know, Kansas hosts a regional for the first time. So then they host a super. You know, Oklahoma had to go to Atlanta to take on the number 2 Georgia Tech Yellow Jackets, right? And remember, you know, Oklahoma down the stretch, man, had to do some incredible things to kind of maintain really good positioning to be a solid number 2. But they go to Atlanta and they win that regional. And just kind of pulling up for memory's sake here. Guys, they came out of loser's bracket. They beat the Citadel, lose to Tech, and then come back and beat Tech twice. That's the number 2 seed in the tournament. They, guys, let's be honest. They sent Oklahoma out there to fill out the bracket, but nobody expected them to make it. Well, then they beat Tech. They walked them off. Remember how crazy that was? Right? And so you look at the other side of this thing. Kansas wins. And, you know, they had Arkansas in there. Of course, you know, Arkansas, maybe not the most robust Razorback team that we've seen. But there was a lot of juice for Kansas. And everybody thought, well, you know, Kansas is going to do it. Well, Oklahoma is like, nah, we're not doing that. We're not losing to the Jayhawks. Barry Switzer would never allow that. They beat them 8-1 and 13-2. They beat them like a drum in Lawrence. And then they get into this crazy bracket where it's all SEC teams. A league they finished 11th in. And they're in the driver's seat in the bracket with the SEC champion having to beat them twice. And what a remarkable postseason for the Oklahoma Sooners. Absolutely incredible. Yeah, North Carolina's just kind of run their way through this thing. And, you know, Georgia obviously has done really well up until they got beat by Oklahoma. You know, we always talk about, well, you know, there's always that one team. You know, maybe Skip Johnson's the dude to get everything settled with Georgia. Maybe. And, again, Georgia's got to beat them twice. But, you know, North Carolina, West Virginia, it's a great story. No matter who wins it, but I just think that North Carolina is just a better team. They're coached better. They got better players. And West Virginia has been a really fun story. And that, again, you kind of go back to, hey, what do you want from the tournament? Well, you've had some great baseball, but, man, I think West Virginia has made this a lot of fun. And I had them as a 2 in my bracket. I thought they should have been a 2 seed. And clearly I was wrong. Right. But, you know, based on the data at the time, because I just wasn't sure what they were going to do with USC. But West Virginia has made this thing a lot of fun. I mean, if you're a fan of college baseball and you're a fan of the underdog, and you know, they got a young, great coach there, obviously, but you know, you get North Carolina, who's a traditional blue blood, and you get West Virginia, who's kind of making history, right? And then you get Georgia, who hadn't won it since 1990, and then you get Oklahoma, who played for it in 2022, but I don't think anybody expected Oklahoma to be here. I don't think anybody thought that Oklahoma would be in the driver's seat right now. It's incredible to think about all that. So I guess we'll pick them, right? I think North Carolina takes it tonight. I think Georgia may take it tonight. But I, you know, I just keep waiting for that offense to wake up. But I just don't know if it's going to in Omaha. But, you know, Oklahoma has the better pitching. But for some reason, I think Georgia may take it and force a winner-take-all deal. And then we'll see what happens in the national championship game. All right, final segment of the show brought to you by the Stark Vegas Clubhouse, the best place to stay in the Golden Triangle, bar none, when you're bringing a large group to town, and you should. No ifs, ands, or buts about it. We've stayed there. We had a great time. I can personally attest the quality of this establishment, this humble abode that you'll be staying at, the old renovated Country Club Clubhouse out past the Highlands off 182, just 5 minutes away from the Mississippi State campus. So conveniently located, man. You just can't beat it, right? So whether it's a ball game weekend or you're just taking some time off to come enjoy Starkville, get everybody together under one roof. Make some memories together. You'll be glad you did. Google the Stark Vegas Clubhouse. When you do, their Facebook page auto-populates. You can peruse the pictures of all the amenities available to you and your guests, the full-service kitchen, the wet bar, the great back porch area, the fire pit area, 6 bedrooms, 2 soon-to-be 3 baths, and plenty of parking. You don't even think about how important that is until you get there. You're like, oh, where's everybody going to park? No worries there. They had plenty of room for all the golfers. They got plenty of room for you and your guest. When you do that Google search, you're going to have some booking options pop up. It's going to be Airbnb or Vrbo. But if you want to save some money, book through the Evolve website at BSR10. That's your promo code, BSR10, the number 10. That gets you 10% off your stay just by listening to this show. All right, we got some more portal news. And if you'd like a little bit more about some of the players, I'm doing a scouting report over at Gene's Page 2 based on some analytics, and you can check that out. We have had some portal departures since we have been together. And so let's pull that up and kind of talk about that. And we've had a new addition as well. We'll kind of break him down and kind of see what's – we're about halfway there. About halfway there. All right. So Tyler Pitzer goes in the portal, as does Dane Burns and Jackson Loger. Now, Tyler Pitzer, what I'm told is that Tyler is hoping to sign. He's hoping to sign a pro deal. I don't know if he's done enough to get that opportunity unless it's really late. But it looks like if in the event that he doesn't sign a pro deal, that he's going to end up back in South Carolina, which is where we got him from, you know. So perhaps that works out for him. And there's a lot of guys, too. Like, we can't afford to, like, wait and see what these guys are going to do, right? What if we just say, okay, we're going to expect Tyler Pitzer back and he gets drafted? Well, then, you know, that by the time we get to that point, the transfer portal will have been drained of quality pitchers that can help us shore up the bullpen. So we have to kind of have a decision now. And really, in some respects, the same can be said of Dane Burns. Dane is the guy that got drafted out of high school, and during that, you know, that gap year that he took in the 18th round, he elected to bypass that, came on to school. We were thinking maybe he'd be a left-handed starter for us. He's had some good moments with us, but, you know, down the stretch, he was a little bit inconsistent, as you guys know. But, you know, Dane, great young man. I mean, I think a lot of Dane, and, you know, wish the best for him. But I don't know that he actually transfers anywhere. It could be a scenario where he just kind of wants some leverage, you know. So we'll see how that plays out. And Jackson Loger, of course, transferred into state last year from James Madison. and just pitched the one time. So this is not a real surprise. But I don't know if we'll ever know kind of the full story about Jackson Logar. But considering the things that we needed out of the bullpen this year, you would think he would have been given an opportunity. But for one reason or another, they basically decided that he wasn't going to be able to help us. And so that's the way the cookie crumbles sometimes. Now, we did add Josiah Overbeek last night. Josiah Overbeek, this is one of the most significant offensive players in the portal. Well, he's no longer in the portal, and that's an important thing, too, because he's headed to Mississippi State. So let's go through this here, and let's talk a little bit about, kind of what he's done. Now, he can play either corner infield spots. You know, he played first base and did some pitching for them last year, but he can play third. And there's a lot of guys that are just ball players, and he is just kind of one of them. One of the most dynamic freshmen in the country this past year, especially from a power standpoint. I'll have a scouting report up on him a little bit later. But one of the things you're going to see a lot of this Bulldog Portal class is guys that led their team in hitting. Josiah Overbeek, .314 was the average, which was the highest on the Army team, the only regular that had a batting average over .300. Played in 46 games, started 45, had 48 hits and 153 at-bats, and also led them in runs scored with 52. So, and that's kind of a team statistic, right? It's not just him getting on base. It's some people behind him that are driving him in. He had 8 doubles, a triple, 17 home runs. And this is an Army team that only hit 42 home runs, and he had 17 of them, and then led them in RBI with 44 runs driven in. A handful of stolen bases, 3 for 3, kind of opportunistic there. One of the things that I like, too, he's only grounded in one double play. He is a line drive, launch angle type guy with crazy power. 56 walks over 41 strikeouts. You don't see that very often in college baseball, and you rarely ever see it from a freshman. He walked 15 times more than he struck out. He had an on-base percentage of .514. Incredible numbers. And again, he has some positional flex, so you can move him around a little bit if you need to. So if you find somebody else that maybe would be a premier third baseman, then he could be your first baseman. You find somebody else that can play first, he can be your third baseman. You love guys that are two-way players too. He also pitched a little bit this year. I don't know if you guys were kind of aware of that. He went 5-0, ERA of 5.57, so not exactly the best, but also had 5 saves. He threw 21 innings, allowed 22. That's just over a hit per. 13 earned runs, 17 strikeouts, 11 walks, pardon me. And then batting average against was .262. You'd like that to be a little bit better, but I don't know how often he's going to pitch for us. But when you begin to think about our bullpen struggles at times, could he kind of Pete Young this thing, right? Could he be a guy that, like a Bobby Thigpen guy that plays for 8 innings and then comes in and throws the 9th when you need him? Maybe, right? You like the opportunity to be able to do that, though, right? And that's one of the things that's just so important about this. Two-way players with the new roster limits, they're huge. And when you look at what he did offensively, I mean, this is a guy that'll be a 20 home run guy next year if he stays healthy, right? It's ridiculous. And so some other numbers, and we'll talk a little bit more about this on Gene's page, but looking at his numbers, there's just some things that just jump off to kind of verify what we already think about him. But man, it's absolutely bonkers, right? So there is a statistic in baseball called Nitro, right? And so Nitro basically means a fly ball with a launch angle and exit velo that has a chance to get out of the ballpark. He's in the top 5% in the country. We talked about the one double play. Yeah, it's because he doesn't hit ground balls. Top 5% in the country. Walks, top 1% in the country. incredible type numbers, right? And it just, again, just shows you the plate discipline this guy has. And max exit velo was 108.2. Crazy numbers. And again, he was a freshman. We talked about, you know, some of the things that had to happen. You remember I wrote a column some time ago, you know, five things that have to happen in order for Mississippi State to get to Omaha in 2027. Let's go back and revisit that. And maybe it's the first time that some of you have seen it or heard about it, since maybe you don't subscribe to Gene's page and you should. One of them was getting more athletic in the outfield, but we've done that. Jake Sauter's a guy that can really run and hit, 17 stolen bases. You figure out, you know, what's Chrisman going to play? You know, is he your DH? Is he your left fielder? And he's a guy, too, that can run a little bit. I mean, he's not a speed merchant by any stretch of the imagination. But one of the things that we got to do is get more athletic, and we got to be better defensively in the outfield. And I don't just mean running down and tracking fly balls. We did a good job of that last year. But we've got to be able to have more assist. Last year, the state outfielders had more errors than assists. Five errors and just three assists. And two of those came from Jacob Parker. We talked about getting bullish in the bullpen. We've already picked up a couple pieces there. But one of the things I think is so important is protect Parker. Jacob Parker is going to be the linchpin of this offense next year. You need to put some people behind him so people can't pitch around him. Maybe he hits two-hole next year. Right? That's what we did with Ace this year. Maybe he hits two-hole. But even if he hits two-hole or three-hole, we've got to have some people around him that can hit bombs. You got to find some boppers, and then you got to find some bullpen. That was basically, you know, the crux of our portal strategy heading into this recruiting cycle. And so far, we've done well. But when you go, you know, you begin, you start looking at the numbers here, and look at, you know, Chrisman. Yeah, he was the Sun Belt Freshman of the Year. He was a first team All Conference player in probably the fourth or fifth best baseball conference in America as a freshman. And then you look to adding Overbeek here, you know, I got one of the best freshmen in the country, right? And these are guys that can be with you for a couple years, right? I mean, I haven't broken down the math to see who all is draft eligible, but and then you add Sauter's, a guy that's a veteran, you know, and again, I think, you know, Sauter, I can't remember which, but Sauter, maybe. He is the guy that hit three-hole at Samford. And so there's a lot of pressure. You hit three-hole, you know, you're really not looking for walks. You're looking to do damage, especially with guys on base. There's a lot of pressure associated with that. You see a lot of breaking balls hitting three-hole. All of that is a factor. And so I think Jake will benefit maybe hitting fourth or fifth in this order. But when you start thinking about stacking this thing up, you know, we haven't identified who our leadoff hitter is yet. But let's say Jake Parker goes second. Well, you know, then you're probably putting Overbeek third. And then you can work in Chrisman and Sauter right there. I mean, see, like, you already think about the middle of your order. You know, look at what you've added with what you have returning. You've done a really good job so far. We're not done yet, obviously. We're not done. And we got to add some more arms. We got to make some things happen. And again, you still got to get another corner infielder. And corner infielders are guys that need to be double-digit home run guys if you can get them. And, you know, we'll see how things kind of play out there. But I like what we've done so far. And I think that's one of the things that, you know, you guys sometimes don't follow this as intuitively as I do, which is why you listen to this show. But I think this is a scenario where offensively we have picked up some absolutely incredible players that have done some big things at their previous schools. And that's one of the things that, you know, we always talk about. We want the ascending player. Well, you're getting proven players that probably still have a little something left in the tank. And that's one of those things that makes a lot of sense to me too. You know, you get the ascending player, but you also get guys that have already proven they can do it on the D1 level. Mississippi State currently listed as the 12th rated portal class in the country, just behind Georgia. Then there's North Carolina at 10, Texas A&M at 9, Missouri at 8. Look at that. But that's more of a maybe a testament to Kerrick Jackson's evaluation skills. It's not like they just stacked up a bunch of players. South Carolina's at 7. You'd expect that with a bunch of their guys kind of rolling in. But Oklahoma is at 6, Virginia at 5. It's clear that Pollard is going to do a good job. That's back-to-back years. He's put a really good portal class together. You expected last year because of Duke guys coming in. Good job so far this year. Kentucky is 4. LSU is 3. Miami is 2. Arkansas currently sits at number 1 in the country in the portal. So a lot of ebb and flow left to go. But State, 5 of our players are guys that have gotten things done, all 5 of them. But what's interesting of the players coming in, 4 of our 5 are rated in the top 250. Yeah, so that's fairly significant, right? Yeah, again, and you got to take these rankings with a grain of salt. That's not me being critical, but that's just kind of how things sit right now. And, in the league, there's a lot of teams that have like 4 players in the top 250. Kentucky has the most right now with 7. That's interesting, right? So Mengeon doing a good job there. But Arkansas, pretty good portal class, obviously. I mean, 8 guys coming in and 5 of those guys in the top 250. And so going to be a lot of ebb and flow with this as we kind of move forward. But I just want to give you guys kind of an update on this. We have had some other visitors in this week. We hope to have another commitment this weekend, I guess between now and Friday, if things go the way they're expected to. But all that understood, that's where the portal sits. And again, it's still an evolving process. And again, we're about halfway done. Listen, if you hadn't done so, go visit dutynoblebook.com. I know some of you are on me about writing a new book. And, we got to reach a stopping point, right? We got a lot going on. There's always something to chase. And, I can't just put everything else on hold to go write a book. And so I need some time where I don't have to be on the phone. And I was on the phone basically all day yesterday, from the moment I got up until Dana got home with dinner. You know, it just felt like it was just one thing after another. And so it kind of made up for that with some content production today. But you go to dutynoblebook.com. You get all my sports titles there. That's Flim Flam, Stark Villains, Alpha Dogs, Dog Pile, The Dude, and, of course, the personal memoir, When the Bottom Falls. Come float with us at True Rest Float Spa of Starkville. Floating has changed my life, and I am about 3 to 4 weeks late from floating. Every time I got ready to jump in there before a road trip, she was a little too busy, and I didn't want to have to make her stay. And so I got to get in there. I could tell last night. I haven't been sleeping well the last couple nights, and that's she notices that too. So maybe you're not sleeping well. Maybe you need to give yourself a break. Let your mind be quiet a little while. We can help you with that. We've helped many others. Perhaps you're next. Dial 662-268-7601. You can speak directly to my lovely wife, Dana. She can tell you anything you need to know about floating. She can get you on the schedule. If you don't need to talk to her and you don't have any questions, you can book online at truerest.com. You can download the app. The one thing that we ask, though, if it is your first float, we need you to be there about 30 minutes early. You'll also get an email with some instructions, and you can go ahead and fill out that waiver. That'll save you some time when you get there. And, of course, come join us over at jeanspage.com, the most comprehensive coverage of Mississippi State sports it's ever been, ever, ever. And been a lot of contenders over the years, you know, trying to take the crown from us. But the dude abides, man. That's what we do. And I appreciate your support, man. So many of you guys, you've reached out over the years, and we've had something going on, and you've been so incredibly supportive. And I appreciate that more than I could ever share with you. And I feel like that I'm a very good communicator. But, man, when people do nice things for me, it goes all over me. I mean, it just does. Just because I try to be a good person and help as many people as I can. And you can't always pour from an empty cup, right? I mean, that's just what that's what the parable teaches us. But, when you guys do something nice, man, I get overflowed. You know what I mean? It's just one of those things that, you know, I really believe that I'm a giver. I can be a taker when I need to be, but I like to give to people because there's so many people out there that are hurting. And I was once like them. And I've had some moments too, even in long-term sobriety, when, you know, things are just not great. And, that's the thing that you figure out. The moment will pass if you let it. right? And I share that all the time to people. The bad times don't hang around unless you continue to wallow in them, right? If you will make a decision, and sometimes, listen, there's other things going on with you and maybe your mental health, and you need to have some professional intervention of some sort. But just day-to-day malaise and blues and things like that, maybe it's not a clinical depression type problem. A lot of that is just in our own heads, right? It's so easy to get overwhelmed by life. And I encourage you to do something good for yourself. People ask me all the time, you know, and I spend a lot of time online talking to people about recovery. And they go, you know, what do you do when this happens? I said, go do something for somebody else. They're like, what? I said, go do something for somebody else. Because it'll stop you from thinking about you. Because what happens is we ruminate in our problems and, oh, woe is us, and nothing's ever going to change, and nobody's ever going to love us. Go do something for somebody else. And sometimes it may be as simple as just go pay for the car behind you's food, right? And, you know, like one of the things that, you know, I hadn't done it in a while. I need to go do it again. But I like to brew it forward at Strange Brew. You know, I like to be able to do things for people that really don't even know that I did them. But when you go do something for somebody else, it makes, number one, you feel connected to a different moment and kind of gets you out of that. And there's just something about spreading random acts of kindness that at the end of the day, we talk about, you know, your kind, your good deed of the day or whatever. There's some truth in that. And it's not just making the world a better place. It's making your head a better space. And so that's one of the things I encourage people to do regularly. When you are feeling down in the dumps and you feel like maybe you just can't go on and you're just waiting, you know, for the good Lord to call you home, go do something for somebody else. You will be amazed at what that'll do for you. And, you know, one of the things that I prided myself on for every time right around finals, I'd go put some money on the student gift card down at the brew, or, you know, I've given a lot of books away and things like that. I mean, just trying to do what we can to put a smile on somebody else's face. And I've had people even hit me up and said, hey, man, it's my dad's birthday. He listens to the show. Do you mind making a video for it? That, it takes me a few minutes, right? And what does it mean to them, right? And it goes back to something that Mike Leach told me one of our last meetings together in football season when those kids were out there playing 7-on-7. And I was like, Coach, did you know about this? He goes, no. I said, yeah, Dan wouldn't have been happy about that. And he goes, well, why not? He said, their level of enjoyment will always exceed our level of inconvenience. That's a great way to live. Doing something for somebody else, affording somebody else to have a good time, and not really kind of fussing about it, right? We'll see you guys on Friday, but until next time, let's all live our lives in a way we make more friends than enemies, and people can see a difference in the way we live.